You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Welcome to Hour 3 of the Big Show. We're glad you're here. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie will be back with us on Monday. You can always get involved, though, whether Jamie's here or not. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So jump on in. Welcome to everybody all along the network, except the folks at WMDX who went away. But hopefully you've come over to the YouTube stream, where if you are watching on the YouTube stream, you got a preview of what now is going to be our opening segment tomorrow, because we got into a little debate after I ran back up from feeding the dogs. So that'll be a fun conversation. Be with us tomorrow morning right when the show starts. But right now, we've got to go to the Middle East. We must go to Iran. We have headlines coming out of the war. Let's start with this. President Trump said Tuesday the United States was indefinitely extending its ceasefire with Iran a day before it was to expire, as a new round of peace talks was on hold. Pakistan had planned to host a second round of talks, but the White House suspended Vice President Vance's planned trip to Islamabad as Iran rebuffed efforts to restart negotiations. Iran has not yet responded to Trump's announcement of the ceasefire extension. They are not, they're not real happy. In other headlines, U.S. forces have boarded an oil tanker previously sanctioned for smuggling Iranian crude oil in Asia, the Pentagon said yesterday, as it puts into place a global warning to track down vessels tied to Tehran. The tanker is the second vessel linked to Iran that has been intercepted by the U.S. military. Iranian foreign minister on Tuesday called the U.S. blockade a breach of the ceasefire and said, quote, striking a commercial vessel and taking its crew hostage is an even greater violation, end quote. Yeah, I've said this before. I think keeping that blockade in place during a ceasefire and potential negotiations is not a good move. Two ships earlier attacked Wednesday by Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard now are in the force's custody and are being taken to Iran, Iranian state television reported. It identified the vessels as the MSC Francesca and Epanemodes. The ship's owners could not be immediately reached for comment. The seizures represent an Iranian escalation after the U.S. earlier seized two Iranian vessels as ceasefire talks were due to take place. So this back and forth is not going to bode well for the ceasefire or for future negotiations, I fear. That is just, again, my opinion. Those are the headlines from the Middle East. Now we turn our attention to other stuff you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Yeah. Boy, now our Democrats were on their high horse when we've had to see a number of Republicans leave Congress because of investigations into sexual misconduct and other things. Well, the Democrats are not as pristine as everyone would like you to think. Representative Sheila Serfilius McCormick resigned from the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday, shortly before the House Ethics Committee was set to deliver its high-stakes decision after finding her guilty of violating several campaign finance laws and regulations. In a statement posted to social media, the Florida Democrat denounced what she described as a witch hunt. Boy, that sounds like a familiar term that she co-opted from somebody else. I simply cannot stand by and allow my due process rights to be trampled on and my good name to be tarnished. Rather than play these political games, I choose to step away, she wrote. Within moments of the ethics panel gaveling in to formally determine its recommended punishment, the House clerk read her resignation into the record. After careful reflection and prayer, I've concluded that this is in the best interest of my constituents and the institution that I step aside at this time, she wrote in part in her resignation letter. House Ethics Chairman Michael Guest noted that given the Congresswoman had stepped down, the committee had lost its jurisdiction and would no longer consider sanctions against her. The committee had found that the Congresswoman was guilty on multiple counts of failing to comply with Federal Election Commission regulations and uphold the Code of Ethics for Government Service. The guilty verdict came a day after Sir Phileas McCormick appeared before the panel for a rare public hearing to face allegations that she stole $5 million in federal disaster funds and used it to bolster her 2021 campaign. So, as much as sometimes we like to demonize certain Republicans, got to demonize the Democrats when they do the exact same thing. And now she's gone, and we'll see what happens. But it's a shame when anybody does this on either side, but it's also a shame now because as we were looking at resignations that were happening in the last couple weeks, the Republican majority in the House was getting smaller and smaller. Well, now they kept one seat here. All right, some other S you need to know. This is troubling as well. Members of the U.S. Armed Services will no longer be required to have an annual flu vaccination shot under a new policy announced Tuesday by Pete Hegseth, the U.S. Defense Secretary. In a video statement posted where? That's right, social media. Good guess. Hegseth described the mandate as overly broad and not rational, and the decision to drop the vaccine requirement as seizing this moment to discard any absurd overreaching mandates that only weaken our warfighting capabilities. Explain to me, Parker, how a flu vaccine would weaken our warfighting capabilities.
Yeah, you might get a cough for a day.
Hmm. Getting the vaccine would give you a cough for a day?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. And COVID
how does
a
vaccine
that
prevents or lessens a disease effect weaken? Well, the answer is it doesn't. It doesn't, Parker. Please, don't be an apologist for Whiskey Pete. The policy change applies to active duty, reserve component, and civilian personnel, according to a Pentagon memo that was released yesterday. Hegseth went on to say, if you, an American warrior entrusted to defend this nation, believe that the flu vaccine is in your best interest, then you are free to take it. You should, but we will not force you because your body, your faith, and your convictions are not negotiable. Unless you're a woman who's not in the military, then it's up to us to decide what to do with your body. Anywho, the U.S. Here's the irony. You want a little irony, Parker? The U.S. Army developed the first flu vaccine. Yes, at the start of the Second World War, because there was a concern of a repeat of the influenza outbreak of 1918 and its effect on military readiness and combat capabilities. That's what weakens our combat readiness, not a vaccine to prevent said disease. The actual disease. You look like you want to speak.
I believe going back even to the Revolutionary War, I believe General Washington had soldiers vaccinated against smallpox at some point because it was so rampant and it was, hurting their fighting abilities.
Yes, their readiness, their combat capabilities and military readiness. Well, so the Army did this. Soldiers served as large-scale test subjects for the program at the University of Michigan. The first widespread use was licensed for the military in 1945, and then it was later passed on to civilians. An annual flu vaccination has been required for service members for more than 80 years. Some exemptions were granted for severe allergies or pregnancy and for administrative reasons, including sincere religious beliefs. Sincere is a big qualifier there. But now, because Pete Hegseth doesn't want a woke military, and I guess woke means believing in vaccines, good luck. Good luck. That's all I can say. In other stuff you need to know, a $6.5 million grant is going to sustain Madison's Children's Museum. We're going to end on a happy note, at least for this part of As You Need to Know. The Madison's Children's Museum will use a $6.5 million gift from a late philanthropist named Jerry Fracci for maintenance projects. Top priorities include repairing stonework, replacing windows, and upgrading ventilation in the museum's basement. Now, the CEO of the museum, Brenda Baker, says yes, she gets that some of these repairs may seem unglamorous. Why aren't we doing something more flashy? But it's all the building's age, so it needs this kind of upkeep, and it costs that kind of money. The Children's Museum, if you don't know and haven't been to it in Madison, is at 1929 or 100 North Hamilton Street. It was built in 1929, the building. So it was originally a Montgomery Ward store. Parker, that was a popular department store at that time. Department stores are some place where you can go in to a brick-and-mortar building, and they carry all sorts of things, from clothes to shoes to appliances to home goods to tchotchkes to jewelry. They got it all in different, say it with me, departments. That's correct.
That makes sense.
Yes. The Children's Museum moved into the building in 2010. This isn't the first time that Fracci has given a big gift. He is a noted Madison philanthropist and businessman. He passed away in January, but he's given to the museum before. The original vision for Overture Center, which opened in 2006, included a space for the Children's Museum. But those plans changed. So in 2005, he donated $5 million to help the museum buy the Hamilton Street building and make it the museum's permanent home. He then, in 2023, gave another $2 million toward building maintenance. So congratulations to him, and thank you to him for giving all that money to keep the Children's Museum going. Replacing the first floor windows is the top of the priority list, along with updates to the elevator and the ventilation system in the basement. That's where many of the museum's exhibits are made. The museum has applied for grants and might change what the pool of money they dip into for projects based on what funding they come in. So if a grant to replace the windows comes in soon, for example, they'll shift that money from Fracci's gift to other projects on the list. So that is a nice way to end Stuff You Need to Know for this hour. It's good. I like to, this is why, you know, a lot of times people will complain about the rich. Say they don't pay their share, they don't do this, they don't help people. Well, here's a guy, very successful businessman in Madison, philanthropist, helping out causes that really need to be helped out. So kudos. Some bad news if you are looking for a job in Wisconsin. We will get to that next. So much more to come. Yes, I know, Parker. We got a lot of time. I don't know what we're
doing. We do.
It's throwing up the peace sign at me.
Oh.
What's up, man?
What's up? Two minutes.
Up? We got That's what we have. I know we got 2 minutes. I'm not throwing it to break yet.
It's not just peace.
We were done with Stuff You Need to Know. I can only dwell on the negatives for so long.
There's a lot of negatives. Yeah.
Yeah, we gotta. And I'm looking ahead to what we got left on the rest of the show. I wouldn't say negative, but I'm not going to say the most uplifting. But interesting. It's interesting stuff, and I think it needs to be talked about, and we'll talk about it as much as we possibly can. What should we? Oh, I want to plug this too. I want to remind people, because I did it earlier, but I want to remind them again, because I know when we first started our social media pages, Jamie was fixated on them so we could get to a certain number of followers so that we could start showing the stream. We could run the stream.
Yeah.
And now we want to just keep growing, because it's important in this day and age. It didn't happen if it's not on the gram, Parker. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to have our Instagram page, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. We need to up that a little bit. We need to get you on there. You need to go there, please. You don't need to, but I'm asking you a favor. Go there and subscribe to it, like it, and interact. You can leave some comments there too. How about Facebook? A lot of our listeners love Facebook. They like to go there. They watch a stream on Facebook. They want to comment on Facebook. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie on Facebook. Those are all new. So is our podcast on Spotify. And if you think, why do you keep telling us this? It's because you're not telling everybody you know. If you told everybody you know and we had all the subscribers, then we wouldn't have to remind you. So if you're tired of me talking about it, go and subscribe. I'll be grateful. Jamie will be grateful. Frank and Parker, they're apathetic about it, but I will convince them to be grateful and show some gratitude. All right. Do all of that and then download the free Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Yes, I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie's not here. Where is she? She's on vacation. I don't know where she is. She's in an undisclosed location, perhaps in some beachside bunker, or working, even though she's not supposed to be. We don't know, but we wish her, we hope she's having a good time and she comes back rested and rejuvenated with us on Monday, because then she will be able to share some of the, I was going to say good news, but some of the news of the day. This just came out. Our good friend Ricardo Torres in the Journal Sentinel published this story, and I've known, interesting side note, Parker, Ricardo, who is now a big-time writer at the Journal Sentinel, started as my weekend producer at another station.
Whoa.
Yes. He is part. I have a coaching tree, too. I have a coaching tree of men and women who have produced for me that have gone on to great things.
Wow.
So
good things to come is what you're telling me.
I'm telling you, don't write it off now.
Okay.
Right now, it may seem very hopeless. But
that's comforting.
There is hope down the road.
Okay. Because
here's the other lesson. Once you cut yourself loose of me, good things are going to happen. So, you know, I don't know if that's the lesson I want you to take. I want you to stick around as long as you want. But anyway, so, but he didn't make up these numbers. He just reported on the story. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Wisconsin job numbers continued to slide in February as unemployment increased to 3.4%. Are you in the process of trying to find a new job? Has this, the increasing unemployment numbers affected you? I'd love to hear your story and how long you've been looking and what you're looking for. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, because sometimes we don't understand the real cost of these numbers until you find yourself in a position where you are looking for work, and it can be very, very tough out there for a number of reasons. One, age, experience, what industries are looking for people to work for them, where you're at in the state. So a lot of things, but I'd love to hear your stories. Total non-farm jobs were 3,019,900, which is a decrease of 10,500 jobs from January and a decrease of 20,000 jobs from this time last year. Much of what the state is experiencing is happening on the national level as well. According to the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, the Wisconsin labor market has cooled a bit along with the national economy. But unemployment remains historically low. Economist from the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development said job declines are something to pay attention to for sure, but the jobs data in March will offer more context. All right, well, we'll see how March plays out when those numbers come out, or March played out when those numbers come out. But does it concern you when, unemployment remains low. That's fine unless you're unemployed and you can't find a job, because then in your house, unemployment remains woefully high. And so it's easy. Economists, statisticians, those kind of folks are always able to use numbers to not lie, but to make things, they can finesse numbers to make them look however they want. So you always have to be a little careful when you're citing those. But again, if you're unemployed, it's high. Unemployment is high. So some other seasonally adjusted observations in the economy here in Wisconsin. Construction continues to add jobs. So that's good if you're a construction worker. Around Wisconsin, there are cranes and construction crews working on projects all over. The industry continues to expand as 800 workers were added in February from January. And during the last 12 months, roughly 10,200 more jobs in construction were added. That brings the total construction workers in Wisconsin to roughly 154,000. So if you're in construction, a good time to be looking for a job. If you're in retail, not a good time, because overall trade is down roughly 9,300 for the last 12 months, and a bulk of that is on the retail trade side, which has seen a decrease of 6,600 workers. Wholesale trade is down 2,700 workers during that period. The biggest hit is in government jobs, which seems a little surprising. So during the last 12 months, government jobs have gone down by roughly 10,000, and in the last month, it's decreased by 5,100. Nationally, much of the attention has been on the federal government. That level of job lost about 2,100 jobs, zero federal jobs lost between January and February. Yeah, because they fired everybody already. The bulk of the government job decrease has been on the local levels. So right here, 6,500 jobs gone during the last 12 months, including 1,800 in February. State government lost about 3,300 jobs in February, but it's only a 1,400 job decrease during the last year. So it is tough. Parker, you're too young to ever really have been unemployed, aren't you?
Yeah, this is true. I haven't had to do the whole job search thing, though, obviously, because I'm here.
Job searches are tough.
It
is. And when you are between positions, it can get very disheartening. Now, my wife is still working. She's got a nice job, but she's at the point where she's putting feelers out to see what else is out there. And after my last radio job, and I was like, I was looking for a quote unquote regular job. Man, it is depressing when you.
Oh, you don't mean the regular world. You mean looking for a job.
I mean looking for a job.
Yeah,
looking for a job is depressing.
I thought you meant a regular job.
Especially if you get to
sucks.
A certain age. Because at a certain age, no matter how much qualifications you have, they look at you and they go, and they can't actually say that because that's age discrimination. They go, listen, Gramps, you should be out to pasture. What are you still doing working? I go, well, I don't know, because I have a lot of skills, and I've got, you know. But then, you know, what skills do I have? Harping on about things? How many companies are looking for that? What do you do? Well, I tell stories and I complain about stuff. Okay, thank you for your – who am I kidding? No human actually reads your resume or cover letter. But that's a whole other issue. Yes, when we come back, should the DOJ be used as a weapon of the president? We'll get into that and more. It is the Civic Media Network.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
I don't know which I am, but I'm one of those two. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie is the other one. She'll be back on Monday. She is enjoying herself on vacation. And she'll be back. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Should the Justice Department, the DOJ, be used as a weapon by the president? I assume I know your answer, but I want you to tell me why. I want you to tell me all about it and tell me your thoughts. Because the Justice Department is barreling ahead with its broad conspiracy investigation into Democratic administration officials, summoning former intelligence officials for interviews and making major shakeups in the Florida-based prosecutorial team. And this is going to surprise you because you're going to say, Brian, well, what did they do? Why are we investigating people? They must have done something. Is it yesterday? Is it last month? Is it? No, my friends. This is going all the way back 10 years to the 2016 presidential campaign. We are still, and by we I mean our administration, is still trying to relitigate, rehash, find reasons, and just completely fixate on things that happened a decade ago. The wide-ranging investigation is based on an unusual and untested legal theory. That theory is that previous administrations conspired for years to violate President Trump's rights through a series of investigations, beginning with the Obama administration's examination of ties between Russia and Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. Boy, oh boy. There is a lot of therapy that would need to be given to this president to shake his obsession with Barack Obama. He cannot let Barack Obama go. He is constantly referencing him. He is fixated with all the perceived slights that he has endured because of Barack Obama and Joe Biden. He just cannot. How exhausting it must be to live your life as a perpetual victim, to believe that everybody in the world, except for your sycophants, is out to get you. You're the president. You won the election. Relax. You didn't win the 2020 election. It's been proven. Let it go. But he can't. And so now we are going to start doing that because We used the term witch hunt in the story about the Florida congresswoman who just resigned. She said it was a witch hunt. The Russia hoax and witch hunt was Donald Trump's rally cry for a long time. So back to the investigation. The conspiracy investigation, which is among the biggest and most legally complicated that the Justice Department is pursuing as part of Trump's vow to prosecute his political enemies. I'm going to repeat that again, because if that does not send a chill down your spine, you're not paying attention. Prosecute his political enemies. It appears to be gaining momentum, too. The probe is part, and that's, if you remember, why did Pam Bondi get fired? Part of it was he was unhappy with the pace at which she was prosecuting his political enemies. He wanted it faster. He wants to vanquish his foes, and he wants to use the Justice Department to do it, and the Justice Department is supposed to be acting independently of the administration. Crazy. All right, so it's... The probing part is looking at the decade-old actions of former officials in President Obama's administration, including former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper Jr. and former CIA Director John Brennan, who played significant roles in investigating the Russian ties. The Justice Department is seeking to prosecute the bulk of the case out of the U.S. Attorney's Office in South Florida and has apparently impaneled a grand jury in the Fort Pierce Courthouse, which is part of the Southern District of Florida. Now, why is that important? Well, because the fact that the grand jury has been impaneled this year in Fort Pierce means that the grand jury proceedings probably would be overseen by U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon. You may recognize that name because she is a conservative favorite who made the controversial ruling to dismiss the federal mishandling of documents indictment against Trump. So the fact that this is all being handled in her district is very telling. If you're thinking, well, is this another coincidence? No. This one's not a coincidence, my friends. This one is on purpose. So let's continue. While the Justice Department hasn't stated the full scope of the investigation, in recent months, subpoenas have gone to Brennan and Clapper, as well as lower-level intelligence officials from that era. The Washington Post reported all of this, and they also said subpoenas have gone to prominent former FBI officials, including the Bureau's former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, former Bureau Attorney Lisa Page, and Peter Strzok, a former counterintelligence agent who helped lead the probe into the Russian interference in the 2016 election. Parker, you may not remember 10 years ago because you were in high school and probably not really caring too much about politics.
I was in middle school during the 2016
You were in middle
election.
School.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. You are Frank, please get my hip medication. I'm feeling very aged at this moment. But this was a big deal, this Russian interference. And there were big investigations, and as there should be, because there was evidence that pointed to the fact that it could be, if not was, true. But now we have to go back. We've got to go back and rehash this, and we're going to bring up everybody who did their job. Anybody involved is going to be called to the carpet. On Monday, prosecutors, as with all things in the Trump administration, let's jump ahead and then have to backpedal. And that's what they did, because on Monday, prosecutors withdrew those subpoenas and instead asked those subjects to sit for voluntary interviews with investigators, according to a person familiar with the case, to which I would say, if I were one of those people, pound sand. I'm not sitting down with you. I'm not rehashing something that happened 10 years ago that is not true. I was doing my job. I'm in the counterintelligence business. I'm in the FBI. I was given a case, and I investigated it. If you don't like the fact that there was a case, maybe don't get involved in things that seem sketchy, and then we wouldn't have to look into them. The latest steps in the investigation come in the weeks after Trump ousted Attorney General Pam Bondi, and as the upper ranks of the Justice Department are filled with uncertainty over the president's long-term leadership plans for the law enforcement agencies. Yes, that's because Todd Blanche is the interim attorney general. Todd Blanche wants to be the permanent attorney general. So Todd Blanche, who was, let's remember, the president's personal attorney, now is acting as the president's personal attorney on a much wider scale as head of an interim head of an agency that is not supposed to be the president's personal attorney. But here we are. So Blanche last week released the first report from the department's weaponization working group, detailing what he described as the Biden Justice Department's improper targeting of anti-abortion protesters. So everybody is, I had never heard of the weaponization working group. That sounds very big brothery. It sounds very too much surveillance for me, but it is what's happening in the Justice Department now. And again, is this something that you want to see? Are these reports that make you comfortable with what's going on? And this can also set a very dangerous precedent because we can only hope, most of us, that in 3 years there will be a different president. That president will then bring in its own Justice Department. But damage will have been done. And to set the president and be able to go to set the precedent of going back and subpoenaing and then withdrawing those subpoenas, but investigating people in the government who were doing their job. They're not, now, to be clear, they're only being investigated because they are Trump's perceived enemies within the Justice Department and within the government. These are not people who are being accused of financial malfeasance. They're not being accused of sexual assault. They're not being accused of any other kind of government corruption. They are being harassed, investigated, and subpoenaed because they did their job. And not in a follow the rules kind of way that we discussed when ICE with ICE agent accountability. This is not the kind of they followed the rules and did something illegal. No, they followed the rules within the law. They followed an investigation where it led them. And just because you don't like where the investigation led them does not mean that you get to suddenly go back and try to relitigate everything and to punish. The Department of Justice is not the dean of students. They don't get to hand out detentions and they don't get to suspend you. They're supposed to enforce the law and not the law that is imagined by the person in charge, but the law that is laid out not only in the Constitution, but in the laws of this country. And it is infuriating to me that we have allowed this to happen. And by we, I mean not just the voters. We voted for, you know, this was the will of the people, I guess. We'll see. But Congress, and it does all come back. It does all come back to Congress having a backbone, but we know majority rules, and right now the Republicans are in the majority. Will that change in November? Cross your fingers. Maybe it will. But until then, Todd Blanche is going to act purely in the interest of Donald Trump. There's no reason to believe he won't. All protestations to the contrary, and he's not even making any protestations to the contrary. That's the problem. They're doing all this in the open. So we can see it, but we're not supposed to believe it, right? Cindy chimes in on the text line. You can too, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. She says, great, more corruption. Yes, if there's, the slogan should not be make America great again. It should be make America grift again, because this whole administration, and I'm sorry, if you're one of the people who backed this and voted for this, I'm sorry if you're offended when I say this whole administration is giving us exactly what they said they were going to do and so much more when it comes to being above the law and going after their political rivals and enriching themselves at the cost of Americans. It's all going to be there. And I didn't want to waste a lot of time on this, but I saw Tucker Carlson yesterday saying, oh, I'm so sorry I backed Trump. I didn't know. I didn't vote for this. I don't realize this. Hey, shut up, Tucker Carlson. You spent years doing nothing but spreading disinformation. You were lying. I'm not going to even make it nice to say disinformation. You lied to the American people and pushed this agenda for this administration. And now the chickens have come home to roost, and you are not happy to be part of that coop. You did this. You got to own it. You got to live with this. You want to change? That's fine. But you get no grace. You get no forgiveness. You don't get to change your tune all of a sudden and have everybody forget. You want to change your tune and, you know, go forth and sin no more? That's fine. But don't come looking for any sort of exoneration from your past acts, because that is not happening. Okay, listen, enough of that. Let's talk about air travel. That's always pleasant, isn't it? Well, it's coming back again, the ability to stack passengers like cordwood in an airplane. It may be a little more refined than that, but it may not be. So stick around. We'll talk all about it. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan, and this is the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Yes, sirree. We are in the home stretch of Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie will be back with us on Monday, but you're here now, and I'm glad you are. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What's your least favorite part about air travel? Is it actually getting to the airport? Is it the experience on the plane? What is it, your least favorite part of air travel? And the reason I bring this up is because this is a subject that came up a couple years ago, and now it's back rearing its ugly head. I will say at the outset, as a guy who's 6'5", and I know Frank will commiserate with me, 6'5", and without the money to fly first class. And also a lot of the flights I take are in the U.S., and they don't have first class. Mm-hmm. They may have the exit row if you get really helpful. The room on an airplane, the seat size, the depth of the aisles is woefully small. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the big problem. And even people who are not as tall as we are, Frank, and not as big as we are, have trouble with the seats. Well, in order to remedy that, or if you're cynical, jam more people onto a plane, the idea of double-decker airplane seats is back.
Whoa. They're bringing it back?
They're bringing it back. The double-level airplane seat concept, this time a designer, Alejandro Nunez Vicente, calls it the ultimate final statement. Now, I urge you to go and find a picture of this because it's intriguing this time. It still is double-decker. So not like bunk beds where, say, Frank would be completely above me, but mm-hmm. it angles. So imagine a staggering, like steps. So you have two levels of seats. The top level is a little bit ahead of the lower level. And when you recline back, there's a little screen that comes out so you can't be dropping stuff on me. If you're in the bottom seat, it reclines and your feet can go underneath the level in front of you, which would eliminate my knees being banged into by every Yahoo who wants to throw their seat back willy-nilly without checking. All right. So it premiered first as a college project in 2020. Then there was a prototype of this in 2022. And over the past several years, this dual-level design called chaise longue, it's not spelled like lounge, okay. It's something else. Maybe that's French. It's inspired frequent social media frenzy, right, and memes. But for Nunez Vicente, the double-level airplane seat isn't some joke on the internet that started 5 years ago. It is his career. This guy, his passion project remains getting this thing developed. Have you guys seen the pictures of this?
I'm looking at it right now.
Are you looking at it right now?
I've seen the pictures.
I'm intrigued.
Parker. From first glance, yeah. What are your qualms? What are your issues with this?
Qualms and my issues. It doesn't look like a lot of space for the legs height-wise.
No, you're sliding them into an envelope.
Yeah.
You're basically mm-hmm. putting them in. If you're my biggest thing is the claustrophobia aspect. I don't like being in a sleeping bag and my feet if I were sitting well on either level. But the lower level especially, my feet would be in what would account for a, a hard sleeping bag. Your feet are in a box, basically.
Yeah.
So you're right. They have to stay flat. There's not a lot of room width-wise. You know, I can't. How will I manspread? I can't.
You can't manspread on a plane to begin with.
No.
Well, I know, but you know, a little. I like to spread my legs a little bit, not obscenely. But I don't want to have to sit on a 4-hour flight with my legs pressed together like I'm being jammed into a pneumatic tube.
I would prefer that over like my legs like scrunched up though. If they're elongated.
Yeah.
But what if they're now here's the thing. But we're well over 6 feet, you and I.
Yeah.
We don't know how deep that goes. So if it doesn't go deep and you can't even and then now you can't bend your knees because it's not high enough, we're in worse shape than we were before.
Well, because
now we're pretzels the whole way.
Can you control how far you slide it though?
I don't think it doesn't go all the way to bed length. It just reclines a little bit. I would imagine the back doesn't recline a whole lot more than a conventional airplane seat now. From what I've seen, It just looks like that much.
Look, the name of the game is have as many people in seats as possible.
Yes.
Well, yes.
To make the most amount of money. Of capitalism. Course. It's not going to be comfortable. Let's be honest.
Well,
even if this prototype is designed to be comforting for everybody, they're going to take that and go, this is great. Could we add a couple more?
Yeah, can we add a couple more rows?
Can we add a couple more? If we just cut back this and just take out a little bit more leg room, we can fit a couple more seats, just more money.
I agree with you 100%. It would be nice if airlines actually took passenger comfort into account when they were laying this out. But no, we've been talking about this for years. The seat size in airplanes is nothing new. It's not a new phenomenon to discuss. Jam more rows in, make the seats a little more narrow, you get a few more people, then those people are miserable, then they have meltdowns, and they become viral videos, and it's all interconnected. You stop feeding folks, then you jam them on there, then you can't even get peanuts because somebody might have an allergy, and the whole flying experience is a nightmare.
Brian, to answer your question, by the way,
yes.
The worst part of flying is landing and taxiing for close to an hour.
Where did you land?
O'Hare Airport.
And they taxied you for an hour?
At 1 a.m.
Because they didn't have a gate open?
Correct.
Was that the excuse?
They never had gates open.
Was it like the mall? They just kept driving around to see if somebody backed out?
Yes, it's happened to me at least 5 times at O'Hare.
Another plane
all the time.
Reverse lights on and you just sit there for 10 minutes. You leave it or what? You leave it or what?
That's basically it.
Wow.
All right. Well, listen. On that note, we're done. Another day. 3 down. Tomorrow's Thursday. We'll be back to do another show. I want you to be back with us. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of the program. Thanks, guys, for your contributions today. We appreciate that. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan, and this is the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.